Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the Union Naval.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome aboard, everybody. Welcome aboard. I'm ever yours, Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Thank you so much for joining us. If this is your virgin voyage, allow me to share with you our mantra. Folks, we want the Republicans out of our bedroom, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. We feel there exists this cavernous gap separating the two orthodoxies, and that it's a gap comprised of many degree-thinking people who can argue quite passionately in shades of gray. And to that end, each and every show, we have fine guests to help best illustrate this point. Today is no exception. Also, if you wish to hook up with us on the web, it's www.alannathan.com. Don't forget that email address, alan@alannathan.com. That's A-L-A-N. Coming at you live and strong each and every Monday through Friday at this time. Don't forget the classic Alan Nathan Show, Saturday, 6 to 7 p.m. And overnight Sunday mornings, 3 to 4, all times Eastern. We are indeed a Main Street Radio Network production. Please check us out at mainstreetradionetwork.com. Feel free to avail yourselves of our nascent but always robust Twitter and Facebook options that we have there for you. And of course, with great dispatch and alacrity, we love to thank our distributor, the Salem Radio Network. That's right, the Alan Nathan Show is entering its 27th year of national syndication, all thanks to you, reaching about 800 towns and cities across a couple of hundred radio station broadcasts each week again, all thanks to you. And by the way, I don't care if you're part of the authoritarian left or perpetually clueless right, please get out of the thought control business. Our topics du jour, as you may have heard, are indeed in the plenty. Some rather bizarre developments, to tell you the truth. For instance, the Trump White House issues a list of 100 exposed falsehoods knowingly spewed by Democrat politicians and their behemoth media enablers while receiving not one single denial from any of those outed offenders. We're going to talk about some of these gems. Also, Kamala Harris claims Trump is, quote-unquote, threatening democracy, despite Mr. 47, restoring democracy by ridding us of her administration's censorial bureaucrats who were pressuring social media to crush dissent. So how can she embody what she criticizes and still be taken seriously? How is that even plausible? It isn't. It really just is not. Astonishing. So here Harris gives a speech claiming that the Trump administration is advancing a quote-unquote intentional vision to undermine American democracy. And yet polls like Emerson show that Trump would still beat her ass even if the election were held today. I mean, is she really this disconnected from reality? Is she really this disconnected from her own irrelevancy? Or is she just trying to rehabilitate her clearly not-so-rehabilitatable persona? It's a rhetorical question. Trust me, no answers needed. By the way, seriously, think about how the hell can Trump's restoring of democracy be labeled as its undermining? This makes no sense. I mean, all polls, and folks, I mean all polls during the election, show that everybody stated that they had a better quality of life under Trump than they had been having under Biden and Harris. Now, if democracy was really all that protected, that would not have been the response. And perhaps that's why also in virtually all polls, they additionally view Trump as a greater protector of democracy than the Democrats. And this was even alongside a whole lot of polls in October, which according to Forbes magazine at the time, showed Kamala Harris being ahead. But then again, you got to remember, Trump is always outperforming his polling by about 5 points. He did it in 2016, he won. He did it in 2020 and lost, but even though he outperformed it by 5, he was still trailing by 8, so 5 doesn't take care of 8, so he still lost. But again, he outperformed by 5 this go-around, clearly enough to crush her and win all the battleground states. But anyway, I mean, all polls view Trump as a greater protector of democracy than the Democrats. And, you know, that was largely due to the illegal border crossings, which Biden Democrats encouraged, but Trump soon stopped. He stopped. It's down to like 99%. That matters. So why is the left always setting themselves up to look like inbred morons by publicly pointing to a square while calling it a circle and then getting pissed off once corrected? They really do look like morons. And they love talking about Trump's, you know, fall to the mid to low 40s in some of these polls. But they're ignoring how virtually all surveys show their own party at a 25% approval rating. And these are polls friendly to them. God knows what the numbers are really like. I would be surprised if they were in like 19 or 20. Again, they're embodying what they ridicule while still demanding to be taken seriously. I mean, can they do this till the midterms without electoral consequences? And I mean, don't get me wrong, the polls show that despite Democrats polling so terribly, they're still slightly favored to win the midterms. This is a joke. I mean, maybe we should take them with a grain of salt, since again, Trump is always outperforming his polling by about 5 points. And that seems to have some transference to his fellow Republicans, at least in tight races. And I'm asking this because polls were especially shown to be colossally off the mark against Trump in 2024. But here you have Kamala Harris saying, oh, no, he's destroying democracy. But Trump removed the anti-democratic censorial bureaucrats and policies established by her and Biden, who again had been pressuring social media to censor dissent. And these bozos were also classifying parents as quote-unquote domestic terrorists for having the unmitigated gall, audacity, and lack of fortitude, nay, the temerity, to object to males rivaling girls in competitive sports at school. These are the hills on which these bozos want to die. And the paradox here is that you have Republicans and just non-Democrats, such as yours truly. I'll never be a Republican, but I don't see myself ever becoming a Democrat again. I mean, the days of centrism and the Democratic Party have long since passed. But I find that Trump, while, you know, maybe not being everybody's ideal, has proven to be the direct antithesis of the authoritarianism practiced by the left. And they were indeed that. The guy removed all these censorial bureaucrats who were pressuring social media to censor dissent. And when parents started objecting to males identifying as females, trans women, from having the opportunity to rival their daughters in competitive sports, this was enough for then Attorney General to fire off a memo saying, we've got to do something about these domestic terrorists. Now, here's the paradox. The school board that requested that they be viewed as such went ahead and withdrew their letter of that complaint. But boy, it didn't take much to pull Merrick Garland by the nose and make him go in their direction. How is it these folks were not thought of as the threat to democracy? Because these are the ones who've always been pushing for censorship. In Murphy v. Missouri, formerly called, you know, I think it was Missouri and other and et al. Against Biden. But basically, the lawsuit against the Biden administration was their pressuring of social media to censor dissent. Now, they were doing so ostensibly to fight what they labeled as misinformation and disinformation, while at the same time never permitting their labeling to be challenged. I mean, isn't that a neat trick? Here's why we're shutting you down. And oh, by the way, we're not going to let you challenge why it is we're shutting you down. We're not going to let you dispute why it is we're shutting you down. So they actually think a label can be used in lieu of an argument they otherwise cannot muster. Sorry, but censorship is the greatest threat to democracy. That's what fascists do. And yet the left are constantly calling those who disagree with them fascists. Even though left wingers are the ones embodying one of the pillars of fascism, which is what? Censorship. Censorship is the key component behind fascism. And yet it's the very thing Trump's against. He embraces free speech for all, including for those who oppose him. And when he opposes things like DEI and CRT and ESG, what he's opposing are agendas that are censorial themselves. Yes, he is for suppressing those who wish to suppress everybody else who disagrees with them. The only folks you can legitimately censor are those who are censorial. You're listening to The Alan Nathan Show.
Baked beans might be a summer classic, but they can also bring a deliciously unexpected twist to your spring menu. Registered dietitian Amy Goodson has more.
Baked beans aren't just for summer. They're a tasty, easy addition to any spring meal. From Easter and springtime brunches to weekday dinners, Bush's baked beans bring rich taste, quick prep, and serious versatility, whether serving them straight from the can or adding your own twist.
From savory brunch bowls to traditional favorites, beans are finding their way into all kinds of seasonal dishes.
There are so many ways to enjoy baked beans. Try a build-your-own brunch bowl with a base like rice or sweet potatoes. Then add chicken, Bush's baked beans, coleslaw, tomatoes, creamy avocado, and a kick of jalapeno. I also love Grandma's favorite Bush's baked beans, loaded with beef, bacon, smoked sausage, and veggies. It's full of flavor and nostalgia, perfect for spring get-togethers.
For more baked bean inspiration and recipes, visit bushbeans.com. That's bushbeans.com.
It's been 5 years since the COVID-19 pandemic began, yet nurses continue to face significant stress and burnout. Brendan Martin, Research Director for the National Council of State Boards of Nursing, or NCSBN, has more.
The nursing community is facing persistent challenges, with nurses continuing to leave the field in record numbers. In fact, our 2024 National Nursing Workforce Study finds nearly 2 in 5 nurses plan to leave the profession by 2029.
More than 138,000 nurses left the profession since 2022, and a lot more nurses intend to leave the field within the next 5 years. Nurses face similar challenges across all levels and experience.
40% of nurses expressed that stress and burnout are among the top reasons for considering a job change. They also mentioned heavy workloads, understaffing, and feeling underpaid contributed to their desire to leave.
For more information on the National Council of State Boards of Nursing 2024 Workforce Study, visit ncsbn.org/workforce.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Every year is Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is the Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left, right, black, white, two-dimensional approach. Absolutely delighted you could be with us, covering a number of things here. As you may have heard, the events as of late are in the Oplenty. Can't seem to get enough of them. It's head spinning. It's nothing short of head spinning. And I for one, find the pace and cadence actually refreshing. Trump is going at such a clip that the left really doesn't know what to do first. They don't know whether to blank or go blind, without a doubt. Anyway, without further ado, we have assisting in the opining and analyzing none other than J.T. Young. He's got a great piece out in the American Spectator. J.T.'s around the corner. I apologize. Right now we have John Deaton joining us, Marine veteran, attorney, former federal prosecutor. By the way, also former Republican candidate for the Senate in Massachusetts. He ran against Senator Elizabeth Warren, a woman who has a long track record of prevaricating about her ancestral beginnings. John Deaton, good to have you back. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. You know, the administration put out a list of 100 prevarications spewed by Democrat politicians as well as their media enablers. And I haven't heard from a single outlet any kind of balking. There's been no counter disabusing, which means that the Trump administration pretty much caught them red-handed. One of the buttes was by Eric Swalwell, California congressman. This schmuck apparently pointed out that no president presided over more plane crashes during their first month in office as President Trump, unquote. Now, this is despite the Department of Transportation showing that Biden had 20 more than had Trump during their respective first months. But, you know, maybe that's not a big one, but there's tons of them like this over and over and over again. And despite having put out this list of 100 lies knowingly communicated by Democrats and their media enablers, not one single one of these offenders has countered those claims by the president. Speaks volumes, does it not, sir?
Absolutely. You know, what we're seeing is that these folks like Swalwell, they just are committed to one thing and not letting the truth get in the way of a false narrative that they're doing. And I agree with you 100%. You know, President Trump has issued more executive orders in those first 100 days, and it's causing them to literally lose their mind. And like you, I find it refreshing. Certainly lots of things to talk about. But no, they've lost the plot, Alan. They've lost the plot.
I'll tell you the truth. One thing I'm curious about is what's going to be happening. I talked about this a few days ago. But this month, in a couple of weeks, we're going to be having the Supreme Court hear arguments regarding these individual district court judges, these low-level district court judges interfering with the executive separated powers through these nationwide injunctions. Now, the House has passed a bill to accomplish this. But, of course, that's reliant upon the Senate that seems helplessly chained to a filibuster that grants the minority party greater power to stop legislation than it allows the majority to pass it. This 60-vote threshold to pass anything strips away from the winning electorate its representative voice, and I think it does so in a way never created by the Constitution. You've got Senate Majority Leader John Thune refusing to relent on his protection of this anti-electorate monstrosity that seems to allow for its members to cast bad faith votes of support and opposition for legislation that they know will never be held to account. I mean, it seems to me that the Republicans are being imbecilic on this issue, because we already know that the Democrats are going to get rid of the filibuster the moment they're in. They've already said it. They've said it over and over and over again. The second we have power again, we're getting rid of the filibuster. And yet John Thune is knowingly letting Democrats have the first bite of that announced apple instead of crunching down on it himself. And one of the things we're going to lose is this opportunity to pass legislation that would limit these judges. Now, to a degree, maybe it's all moot because this seems to already be anti-constitutional, and I believe the Supreme Court will accordingly find that to be the case on May 15th. I ask you as an attorney, what say you? Am I right, wrong, where am I?
Well, I think we unpack a couple of things. One, you're right in the fact that the Democrats said that they're going to end the filibuster. People like Senator Warren have lobbied every time they're in power. Her, AOC, all of them say that we have to. And this issue highlights, think of this, with these federal district judges, you could take the smallest state in the country, state of Rhode Island, where a district court judge could enjoin national policy, enjoin foreign policy, basically usurp the president's authority on immigration law by enjoining nationwide. And so the fact that we can't get seven Democrats to agree with legislation that would say, listen, if you can show a nexus that this affects your district where you have power and authority, then yes, you can enjoin. But only then. The fact that we can't get seven Democrats to agree with something like that shows you how on point you are on this issue. They're going to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory if they don't change their course, Alan.
No, I agree with you. And I had a piece in The Spectator not long ago. It was just last month. The headline of it is The End of the Filibuster is Inevitable. And the subtitle is Why is Senator John Thune, the Senate Majority Leader, why is Senator John Thune intent on allowing a future Democrat majority the first use of a filibuster-free Senate? The only reason why I'm kind of still sanguine about everything is because I'm pretty sure the Supreme Court will rein in these individual district judges. You can't have 600 and some odd individual district judges having the prerogative to supplant the president's separated powers, a separate branch unto himself, for God's sakes. I mean, you can't have 600 and some odd district judges wield this kind of power. They were never elected to. And the Supreme Court has already found in the past that the judiciary is ill-equipped for this kind of role. Yet here we are looking at these nationwide injunctions. And if anybody talks about overriding them, they're the ones accused of being lawless when, in fact, you have judges, district judges, that are themselves being overtly lawless, thinking that they can do so with impunity just because they're wearing the trappings of officialdom. Or am I overstating a damn thing?
Just the districts, but it goes to their forum shopping. So they go to a judge that was appointed by Biden or Obama, and they get a favorable ruling that enjoins the president. I agree with you. I think that's going to stop. And here's the thing on the filibuster. You know, a year from now, Alan, we'll be in midterm election cycle season. And, you know, historically the midterms go against at least one of the houses or the Senate flips and goes against the party in power. And they're going to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory if they don't do something.
Yeah, I think this is why the president has to start considering his available constitutional option to check the judiciary. Our founding fathers wrote the Constitution in such a way as to ensure that the judiciary could never enforce its own rulings. Therein lies the inherent check that the executive has against the rogue court. He can just ignore them, say, take me to Congress, and if the Senate can't muster the two-thirds votes necessary to stop him, then he wins the constitutional separation of powers argument, and it will have been constitutionally arrived at.
So Zuzu is the story of an adorable hermit crab that actually mistakes a piece of plastic for its shell. There's a short film on joinzuzu.com that is this extraordinary short film about Zuzu's story, but also there's a petition online where people can go and easily, in just moments, sign this petition to advocate for federal EPR legislation. This is so important because this allows us to create a national strategy of collective action to scale up a solution to fix the recycling problem in this country. So I partnered with S.E. Johnson on the Zuzu movement because S.E. Johnson is one of those rare companies that is out at the forefront of this issue and pushing to recognize that companies have a responsibility to play in the system. It's not just about consumers recycling. Companies and the products that they create need to be recyclable. They need to take responsibility for the life cycle of those products, and that's what S.E. Johnson is doing. For more information, go to joinzuzu.com and sign the petition.
The fan favorite series Leverage Redemption returns for its third season April 17th on Prime Video. The show follows a team of reformed criminals who prove sometimes it's good to be bad as they use their less than legal skills to help those in need fight back against the rich and powerful. In season 3, the team pits themselves against a power broker stealing the town's clean water, a pool hustler with a side business in international extortion, and a corrupt mayor who's the judge and jury of his small town, all while dodging a plan of vengeance from a past enemy. But no matter what, when someone needs help, they provide the leverage. Elise Shannon plays Brianna Casey, a brilliant engineer and hacker.
Audiences will love this new season. It's filled with big surprises, major action, lots of humor, and as always, a lot of heart. My character Brianna is still learning about the world of cons, but she brings her own spin to everything. Snarky humor, it's high tech, and she helps the team stop some truly awful people.
Don't miss Leverage Redemption, April 17th on Prime Video.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. I'm yours, Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is The Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left-right, black-white, two-dimensional approach. Absolutely delighted you could be with us. I was looking a little earlier on the American Spectator. Fine publication. Has been around 60 years. Yours truly has had a few columns published in that august outlet. And I came across one by J.T. Young. The headline is, "The Trump Government Cuts Overturn Democrats' Entitlement Mentality, and They Have Become Unhinged." Now, my only disagreement with Mr. Young is that I believe that he perhaps is being unnecessarily charitable. But aside from that, it's a fine piece, and I recommend everybody give it a quick read. And he happens to be with us right now, former congressional political analyst and policy advisor. He also served in the Department of Treasury and the Office of Management and Budget under President George W. Bush. His new book is the highly praised work entitled Unprecedented Assault, How Big Government Unleashed America's Socialist Left. His writings have appeared in outlets, again, such as The Wall Street Journal, The Washington Post, The New York Post, and again, obviously, the American Spectator. Good to have you back. JT, how are you today?
I am fine, Alan. Thank you for such a wonderful introduction.
No, my pleasure. And you know, I like the publication as well. They published a couple of mine very, very quickly. I actually had one about how Trump really, when push comes to shove, does have the constitutional prerogative to actually ignore a rogue court or the aggregate rogue judiciary. People forget that our founding fathers deliberately ensured that the judiciary would never be allowed to enforce its own rulings. And the whole purpose behind that was to protect us all from a potentially rogue court. And therein lies Trump's prerogative to check the judiciary. Now, he's not a king, so he too can be checked. You know, if he's found to be the one who's rogue by the House, they can impeach him and fire that off as a referral to the Senate for a Senate expulsion. But as I've also pointed out, if they can't reach the two-thirds votes necessary to expel that president, then by default, he will have won that separation of powers constitutional dispute, and that position will stand, and the judiciary will have been appropriately stopped, and there will be nothing lawless about it. Where am I mistaken?
Well, I think, to your point, I think the left is going to rue the day that they took Trump to court on so many of these issues, because the final arbiter within the judicial branch, you know, is the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, he has a supermajority there. And I think the left tends to forget that their delaying tactics may be giving them some short-term wins, but long-term, they're opening themselves up to a series of court decisions that could lock in precedents for him to continue to follow over the next 4 years, could allow other presidents to do the same thing. And even when he loses in a court, the court will give him basically a roadmap as to how he could adjust the way he was trying to achieve his ends and seek to make them constitutional under a Supreme Court ruling. And we saw Biden doing this with student loan forgiveness. The Supreme Court stopped him, and then Biden continued to try to do it by tweaking and trying to follow the precedent that the Supreme Court had set. So I think the left has made a real mistake in going the court route, and that they could be opening President Trump up to some even bigger wins down the road.
Oh, no, I agree with you. And we have to remember that each branch has certain absolute powers beyond the reach of the other two. That's how they each leverage the checks and balances against one another, respectively. Because you can have all the inglorious language you want, all the spasms of indignation expressed that you want, but ultimately, jurisdiction comes down to the one that has the most power to do whatever's trying to be accomplished. And this process has always been an option for presidents. It's been a guiding factor in one manner or another for a number of our previous leaders. Thomas Jefferson knew this with the Louisiana Purchase. Andrew Jackson triggered the Trail of Tears when he defied Worcester v. George in 1832. Abraham Lincoln declared war without congressional approval while also suspending habeas corpus when if he hadn't done so, would have led to the South overrunning the North and perhaps splitting the Union. Biden, as you pointed out, he continuously pushed student loan forgiveness maneuvers while bragging that the Supreme Court, quote unquote, didn't stop me. And as you said, the guy just he just wound up using progressively weaker statutes as faux replacement grounds to circumvent those Supreme Court rulings until his term ran out. So to a degree, I think the Democrats perhaps have already done what you're saying they might still do in the future. if they're not careful, I say they've already proven to not be careful enough. We've already got that roadmap, do we not, JT?
Yeah, I think we do. I mean, and I think what Trump is doing with executive orders is really following the momentum in this area that Biden did all of these various actions that he did, DEI, he did executive order. Over and over, Biden was going with executive orders and unilaterally acting and then to see where the process would take him. I think Trump is basically following in Biden's footsteps, and I sure hope that's not the soundbite that comes out of this, but you get the drift of that he was following the executive order process and realizing that there was a lot of power in the executive branch here. And I don't think that we have fully tapped how far that power is going to be allowed to go. I mean, we're going to see in the regards to Doge and all of the various things that Trump has been trying to do unilaterally with executive orders. I mean, we still have not seen the full extent.
No, I think you're right on the money there. As a matter of fact, in that piece I referenced, by the way, the damn thing got slammed with so many comments. I mean, that piece of mine in American Spectator got hit with more comments than had all the other columns received themselves over the next few days. It seemed to resonate with a lot of people. And what I had done was I quoted CNN legal analyst Eli Honig saying quote, and by the way, Eli Honig, is as left as he is, he also thought that virtually all the cases against Trump brought by the Democrats were preposterous and without grounds. But still, he's chastising Trump for his rapid executive orders and for having the temerity to challenge the judiciary when nothing could be more constitutional. This is what he writes. Excuse me. In my view, we reach a constitutional crisis only when we don't know what to do next. And if the president is blowing off the courts, then our only options are pale ones indeed. A judge can make contempt findings, but why would an administration that already defies court orders care about that? If you could ask the founders what happens to a president who defied the courts, I suspect they point to impeachment as the proper constitutional remedy. But we live in a modern reality, and that's not happening. Unquote. Now, this is what I said. Notice to Mr. Honig. Your fear that Trump's check option is unreasonably too effective does not make the tactic any less constitutional simply because he would likely survive the congressional check on him. And that's when I point out that it's perfectly fine that many of Trump's executive orders have been challenged in court. But the reality is, and you highlighted this, as long as Trump's orders stay within his own separated powers as head of the executive branch, and, you know, they don't usurp the separated powers of the other two branches or infringe upon the constitutionally defined prerogatives of the states or you know, individual rights of the citizenry. Well, then clearly his executive orders really cannot be blocked because he is staying within his lane. You can't have the judiciary rule that a president can't use his prerogatives as he sees fit just because they disagree with it. And at the same time, cannot find any connection to the Constitution that's being violated. Or am I seeing too much into this, JT?
No, I think you're right. And I think, one of the examples of this is that Congress has delegated more and more and more power to the executive branch because they wanted government to do more and more and more. And this is absolutely the case in the whole regulatory state. And the courts have blessed Congress delegating that power. And what we find now is that President Trump is looking and seeing that the executive branch has immense control over a wide swath of so many activities that go beyond what we think of as conventional government, and that he's using the executive power that's been delegated to him.
Right, and it's as if they're really ticked off that he has the temerity to use all the powers that our founding document does indeed allocate to him. And you point out in your piece that nothing epitomizes Democrats' entitlement mentality like DEI. and they've been outraged over the great ease that Trump has been able to demonstrate in getting rid of DEI from so many areas of government. JT, great having you back, folks. You're listening to The Alan Nathan Show. Going to be right back.
Fashion consultants Stacey London and Clinton Kelly from the popular TV series What Not to Wear are back together again. And this time they're making over the makeover show with Prime Video's original new series, Wear Whatever the F You Want. In the new series, premiering April 29th, Stacey and Clinton are ready to transform clients in the fashion capital of New York City, helping them bring their fantasy look to life. Whether it's punk rock or eclectic bohemian artist, Stacey and Clinton empower individuals to live out their fashion fantasies and discover their style truth. Wear Whatever the F You Want offers a fresh perspective that celebrates personal expression over outdated style guidelines. It's all about freedom of expression without any rules. Don't miss the highly anticipated reunion of TV's favorite fashion experts, Stacey London and Clinton Kelly, in Wear Whatever the F You Want this Tuesday, April 29th, exclusively on Prime Video.
More than 7 million Americans are living with Alzheimer's disease, the highest number on record. A new survey from the Alzheimer's Association finds that nearly 4 in 5 Americans want to know early if they have the disease before symptoms interfere with their daily lives. Dr. Elizabeth Edgerly, Senior Director of Community Programs and Services at the Alzheimer's Association.
We found most people want to be proactive in addressing their memory concerns, even if it might be Alzheimer's. That's good news because early diagnosis offers the best opportunity for care and for treatment.
The survey also found most Americans are open to treatments that can slow the disease.
92% of people say they would take medication that could slow the progression of Alzheimer's, and nearly 60% would accept moderate to high risk with treatment. It was clear people want earlier diagnosis, access to new therapies, and support from day one.
Visit alz.org/facts to learn more.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Are you excited about being a new grandmother?
Of course I am. A little intimidated, too.
Why?
Taking care of a baby today is so different than when I had you.
But, Mom, you did great with me.
Thanks, son. But I put you on your stomach to sleep.
Right. But now we know that babies should always be placed on their backs to sleep, for naps and at night, to reduce the risk of sudden infant death syndrome, or SIDS.
You also slept with blankets and toys in your crib.
True, but now we know to keep everything out of the crib except for my sweet baby girl. No blankets, pillows, or other soft or loose items.
Daddy's going to teach Nana all the ways to keep you safe while you sleep. Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
For more tips on safe sleep for babies, visit safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. That's safetosleep.nichd.nich.gov. Sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, It's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
FBI arresting and charging a sitting judge in Milwaukee. Now, the FBI says that she obstructed their agents when they were trying to arrest an undocumented immigrant who was in her courthouse. It's been reported she allowed him to leave through a side door. But what does this say to you now in terms of what the administration is willing to do and how this was carried out?
Well, obviously, they're trying to send a note of intimidation, not only to her, but to all judges and maybe to all Americans. But I don't yet know the specific details of this case, whether she escorted the guy out the jury door or whether she's let him. So that's all murky. I don't want to comment on this specific case. But especially on the issue of immigration, there are a lot of people who are appalled by what the administration is doing. And there will be times for civil disobedience. And to me, let's say she did escort this guy out the door. If federal enforcement agencies come to your courtroom and you help a guy escape, that is two things. One, it strikes me as maybe something illegal, but it also strikes me as something heroic.
Yeah, and once you go down that path, then the president can lay claim to the same thing. Hey, maybe what I'm doing is illegal, but it's also heroic because it's for a greater good. Once you go down that path, you're setting a precedent for people with whom you disagree to say the same thing that you're saying to justify your own otherwise illegal actions. Every year is Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is The Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left-right, black-white, two-dimensional approach. You were listening to a discussion some days ago on PBS NewsHour with Amna Nawaz. She introduces the topic of this Milwaukee judge, Dugan, who had been arrested for aiding and abetting an illegal immigrant to escape the hands of ICE, federal agents who were there to do their jobs. They were there to ascertain an illegal immigrant who was apparently on trial for domestic abuse and had already committed other violent acts in the past and was in fact ready for deportation. And this Judge Dugan wound up getting arrested for having aided and abetted this fugitive. And you were listening to people like David Brooks of the New York Times saying, well, I don't understand all the specifics here, but I'm going to predicate this view on facts I do not have and say that I think the judge was being heroic, even if she was technically being illegal. Well, Trump can now make the same claim. Oh, I get to be illegal, too, because what I'm doing is heroic. So, Mr. Brooks, you need to execute a greater capacity for self-appraisal, lest you look like an inbred imbecile. Oops, too late. But the vast majority of Americans are happy to have the border sealed up by 99%, and most agree with what Trump's doing with the deportation. Now, don't get me wrong, the media's had some impact on assuaging people to think that Trump's tactics are somewhat high-handed, but there's no other way to deport people than to be doing something that offends somebody. You know, you're going to offend somebody. It's like John Adams in that movie 1776, The Spirit of 1776. We're in a war, damn it. Somebody's going to be offended. And it's all for a very good cause because we have some atrocious things going on. Have a listen to what RFK Jr. recently had to say, the Secretary of HHS. Clip 10, James, if you please.
We have ended HHS as the role, as the vector, the principal vector in this country for child trafficking. And during the Biden administration, HHS became a collaborator in child trafficking and for sex and for slavery. And we have ended that, and we're very aggressively going out and trying to find these children, 300,000 children that were lost by the Biden administration.
So their policies apparently were known to be quite slipshod, and they wound up being easy instruments for facilitating the endangering of over 300,000 migrant children. It strikes me that deportations that can help bring about a declination of these incidences are all the more welcomed. Anyway, without further ado, we have assisting in the opining and analyzing none other than Grant Berry. He's founder of Reconnecting Ministries. He's also author and producer of the highly praised work entitled The Romans 9/11 Project. Grant Berry, good to have you on the show. How are you today?
Alan, it's good to be with you. I'm doing great. Thanks.
Good to have you. Good to have you. I know one of your beefs has to do with the increasing level of anti-Semitism being demonstrated across the country. Trump has decided to withhold funding from a multitude of colleges and universities who have deliberately ignored what's necessary to bring about a reduction of these incidences. August academic institutions like Harvard come to mind. And he's getting a lot of pushback from Democrats for having the temerity to want to fight anti-Semitism. And this is after a new report came out by the Anti-Defamation League showing that Jewish people have been subjected to this more so than they had 50 years ago. I mean, apparently over 9,300 incidences have been reported in a very short period of time. Tell us more about this.
Well, you know, Alan, I think it's very interesting. I think Trump summed it up best at the his speaking to the Congress in February, when he basically said to the Democrats, "There's nothing I can do. There's nothing I can do that would allow you to even give me any type of support." And this is unfortunately what we're seeing. I mean, thank God. We are Trump is beginning to stand up for anti-Semitism in the college campuses, and yet the slightest thing that goes wrong, it's even like with the immigrant thing you were talking about previously, it's like the Democrats are all over it. And of course, with the media behind them, you're hearing these exaggerated voices. But, you know, the good thing, Alan, is that right now I believe that Trump has good people in office doing the job that are fully supporting him. And the American people that voted for him are fully behind him. And unfortunately, we have a terrible division in our country, which is only getting worse. And we're seeing media lie and manipulate all the time, and it's even difficult to know exactly where to get real news. Sometimes, Alan, I long for the days of Walter Cronkite.
Yeah, there's no longer such a thing as objective truth. They don't understand that your assertions need to be tethered to their required validating grounds. Otherwise, you're spewing sophistry out of your backside. And we're not even looking at arguments between two different positions. We're looking at arguments between perhaps one position and a slogan on the other side that's not really tethered to the agenda that said slogan is camouflaging. And therein lies our problem. You know, we have this new style of argument in which the left believes that its agenda is validated by its stated goal. That's never the case. An agenda is never validated by its stated goal. Why? Because that's the job of the agenda, to validate itself by showing how it will deliver on that stated goal. You're listening to The Alan Nathan Show.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.